Sports Radio 1290, CFRW, Winnipeg.
I'm still shaking right now. I'm just so honored to be included in this draft class.
A division of Bell Media.
Sports Radio 1290 presents the summer edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game.
A quick shot, score! Just like that!
Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's start off with a bang and go right to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
A bit of a frenzied start to the program, and that's because Blake Wheeler has signed a new contract with the Winnipeg Jets, a two-year contract, terms of the first year, $2.45 million, the second year, $2.65 million. Let's welcome to the program Blake Wheeler's agent, Matt Keeter. Matt, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hi, how are you?
Doing very well. Thanks for joining us on the short notice.
Great, no problem.
Matt, we, you know, the arbitration date was coming up kind of quickly, beginning of August. Obviously, the two sides have managed to avoid that. What brought the yourself and representing Blake and the Winnipeg Jets together? What brought the two sides together?
I think it was just the long-term trusting relationship that I have with Kevin Cheveldayoff, and I think that we were able to kind of bridge a gap that we had, and I think both sides had to give in. There's a little bit of give and take for both sides, and we kind of grinded the whole thing out last week and then through the weekend, and we're able to reach an agreement today. And I've known Chevy a long time and definitely have a lot of respect for him, and he certainly knows how to make deals, and he's been active in the American League and the NHL for years, and as I have also, and we were able to work something out.
Matt, why 2 years?
I think it's because he has the right to be a free agent in 3 years, mm-hmm. and 2 years kind of gives both sides the opportunity to get to know each other, and hopefully these 2 years will be a bridge to a longer-term deal. I know Blake's very excited about the marketplace and the move up there into a real hockey market again, like he had in Boston. And having grown up in Minneapolis, I know that he appreciates the, being in a hockey environment, and you guys certainly have that there.
Matt, Blake obviously joined the Atlanta Thrashers late last season. How much did his experience in Atlanta at the end of the year factor into him wanting to stay with the Jets organization?
Well, I mean, it was huge because he believes in the players that he has and his teammates. He enjoyed his time there. He obviously got a lot of ice time and produced a fair amount, and I think that's important for him. And he had a lot more ice time than he did in Boston, played a bigger role, and was able. I saw him grow and mature as a player in the last 23 games, and even at the World Championships, I encouraged him to go over the World Championships. He played very well over there, and I think he'll do nothing but continue to grow the next 2 years and lead hopefully to a longer-term deal with Winnipeg and in the league.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Matt Keeter. He's Blake Wheeler's agent. In case you missed it, Blake Wheeler has signed with the Winnipeg Jets a two-year deal, $2.45 million in the first year, $2.65 million in the second year. Matt, last year Blake went to arbitration with the Bruins, he ended up being traded to Atlanta. Did the fact that he went to arbitration last season factor at all into him wanting to avoid it maybe this year?
No, I mean, that's a good question, but no, I don't think so. I mean, I think having gone through the process last year, he totally understood it, and, I mean, obviously it's not something anyone wants to go through, but, I think we were prepared to go again this year if we had to, but we were able to work something out, and I think that the fact that he got so much ice time at the end of last season and feels comfortable with, from what he's heard on everyone about the new coach going in there, Claude Noel, I think he feels, really comfortable there. And, and we were able to get this deal done and avoid that process was important. And, again, that says a lot about Chevy and Zinger and what those guys are doing there in terms of building up their reputation amongst NHL circles as the deal makers, which is important.
Matt, you touched on it earlier, just final question here, and many people are, Winnipeggers are
always concerned that people don't want to play here, and it seems like so far Canadians have certainly not had an issue with it. And Blake, being an American, can you speak a little bit about, you know, being an American playing in a Canadian city, and obviously Winnipeg being a new entry, how he felt about that, and maybe the proximity?
I've gone through it with three clients, because I've also represent Ron Hainsey and Mark Stewart.
Okay.
And so I've got three guys that have been transplanted from Atlanta up to Winnipeg, and all three, there wasn't much hesitation at all for those guys to go there. I mean, obviously the weather's different and the golfing seasons are a little bit different, but, you know, I think for these guys, and Mark and Blake both grew up in Minneapolis, and Ron grew up in Connecticut, and they're used to cold weather. They're used to, you know, wearing long johns and going to the hockey rink. So for these guys, there's no hesitation at all, and they're excited. If you're a hockey player, you want to be in this type of environment. And I've had, you know, a lot of guys from Montreal, Mike's Komisarek, Chris Higgins, and others, and in Vancouver this year, Higgins was there. I mean, I'm used to if guys that play in these environments that you guys are offering, they want to be there, and the players want to be there. So the ones that want to be players. So I don't think it'll be that big a deal, you know, for the ones that understand hockey and that want to be there. And if you sign long term there, you know what you're going to be getting, and you're going to have a great, passionate fan base and very professional ownership and management, and that's what people really are looking for.
Matt, you know, not specifically related to Blake Wheeler, but you're talking about how, you know, these you know, a lot of players are wanting to play in traditional hockey markets. Are you finding that there's some pushback from players you represent about playing in the non-traditional markets, sort of where hockey might not be as rooted as it is in Canada?
I mean, I think it's more about opportunity. You know, I mean, I think if the opportunity is the same, that guys will want to be in a more traditional market. That's just my gut feeling on it. But if there's better opportunity down south, then they're going to go down south. I mean, they want to build their careers and everything. But I think playing a traditional market is great, and I think it's great for I think it's a good for players that are going to Winnipeg are going to appreciate the market there. I was there in 1999 for the World Juniors, and it was one of the best, well-run tournament, most passionate people watching games. I loved it, and it was a little chilly, but it was intense to, you know, see the fans and everything that's brought there. I can only imagine what it's going to be like there, you know, this fall when games, NHL regular season games are being played there. And I know my three clients are all really excited about going.
Well, with those three clients, I'm sure you'll make your way to Winnipeg at some point, and we'll look forward to seeing you in Winnipeg. Matt Keeter, thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem. Anytime, and good luck up north there.
Appreciate that. Thanks very much, thanks. Matt. That was Matt Keeter. He's Blake Wheeler's agent. In case you missed it, Blake Wheeler has signed with the Winnipeg Jets, avoiding salary arbitration. He signed a two-year contract. First year, $2.45 million. Second year, $2.65 million. Works out to be the average annual value of $2.55 million. You know, why don't we go to break? Then when we come back, we're going to be joined actually by Tom Gelutti of the Bergen Record to talk the New Jersey Devils. We'll get back to Blake Wheeler 6:30 this afternoon or this evening. We'll get back to talking about the Blake Wheeler contract and the other contracts signed by the Winnipeg Jets late this afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Good evening, Winnipeg. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I am your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Michael Remus is operating the R-Desk at www.illegalcurve.com. In case you missed any of the interview with Matt Keeter, agent for Blake Wheeler, it will be up on illegalcurve.com, hopefully by the top of the hour. Also, some of his comments will be tweeted out accordingly. But it's time now. Let's go back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And let's welcome to the program a good friend of ours from the Bergen Record in New Jersey. He covers the New Jersey Devils, Tom Gelutti. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me on, guys.
Appreciate it very much, Tom. Thanks for your time. Let's start with the question on everybody's mind right now. There's only one team in the NHL without a head coach. That's the New Jersey Devils. Any progress there? Any time frame there?
Lou Lemieux keeps on saying soon. He's been saying that for a while. So I don't know what that means anymore. I'm waiting like everybody else.
any insight? Is it? It's not going to be Jacques Lemaire, is it?
That's what Jacques Lemaire says. So,
do you believe it?
I do believe him. Yeah.
Okay. Then if not Jacques, then who?
I don't know.
Tom, do you think that, there were whispers earlier, obviously, I mean, in the summer that Ken Hitchcock would be a good fit. It seems like if he were to be the fit, wouldn't he have probably been the fit a while ago?
Yes, I agree with that. But then you would say that about pretty much everybody who's available, right?
True.
if they were going to be the coach, why hasn't it been done for weeks, for months? They haven't had a coach since the last day of the season. I think that was April 10th when Jacques Lemaire said he's not coming back. And we're at July 18th.
18th.
It's not a salary cap problem, is it?
Yeah, right. I don't think it had anything to do with that. I don't know. I really don't know the answer. I mean, I've had people saying to me earlier in the spring / summer that maybe it has something to do with the ownership situation. But people with the team deny that it has anything to do with that. It's a good question. I've given up trying to make sense of it because you just a lot of people guess here and there, and they just. I don't think there's really a clear answer.
Tom, do you think at all that the fact that, I guess coaches, many of them will take any job they can get, but do you think that there's a factor at all that Lamoriello gets rid of coaches so quickly that there maybe is a lack of security and some coaches may be hesitant to move to New Jersey and take that job?
I don't know about that. I mean, it's a fair point to bring up, but like you mentioned, there are people who would love to have the job, Ken Hitchcock being one of them, and Guy Carboneau, I know he said he sent his resume to the Devils and never heard back from them.
Really?
I'm pretty sure Michelle Therrien would like to be the coach of the Devils. So, I mean, these are things, that they wouldn't be scared off by that. And I don't know, maybe a younger coach who was looking for his first shot would be feel that way. But maybe the Devils wouldn't feel that way about a young coach either, so...
Tom, Zach Parise is a restricted free agent, and he has an arbitration date set for early August in Toronto. Can you update us on the negotiations, if there have been any in the last few weeks, and is there any chance that he'll sign a multi-year contract before August 4th or whenever that date is?
I think it's August 3rd. Yeah, I definitely think there's a chance. I think they will. I don't think either side wants to go to a hearing, so I think there will be a contract of some type signed before August 3rd. But I probably will go up to that deadline pretty close, maybe. As of the end of last week, there was really nothing going on there. I think they talked some before the Devils filed for arbitration. I think they talked some after that, but then once you hit the draft, that was a focus. And then, free agency hit on July 1st and re-signing Andy Green and Hedberg, that was a focus, and then signing Adam Larson, that became a focus. So maybe now they're finally getting down to it, this week. But these things, I think, always go down to the wire because that's the negotiating leverage point, that the date of that hearing. So I would guess it's probably going to be similar with that, and we'll go down to early August or late July before something is settled.
Tom, you mentioned Adam Larson. Can you talk about what role the team, I guess mainly Lamoriello, foresees for Larson this upcoming season?
I think in a perfect world, they would love to see him on their team playing regularly in their top six. I don't know. I think it's a lot to ask an 18-year-old to step in and play top 4 minutes. But maybe if he shows in the preseason and training camp that he can. They can play. They can start him out slowly and work him into the lineup and see how he does. He has some of the skills that they're missing. From what I saw him in camp last week, he passes the puck pretty well out of his own zone. I didn't really see much of an offensive side to him, but it's hard to tell from that sort of camp. But they need puck moving skill on defense, and if he's able to provide that and able to play, as an 18-year-old, they would welcome it.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Tom Giulitti of the Bergen Record in New Jersey. Tom, the Devils added some toughness this past week. They signed Cam Jansen and Eric Bolton. Bolton, a former Atlanta Thrasher / Winnipeg Jet. Why does Lou Lamoriello go sign these guys when last year, he had Pierre-Luc Letourneau and LeBlanc.
He missed one of his names.
Yeah, sorry, he's got too many names. They had him, and he didn't really have a very, effective role with the team, let's say.
Oh, LeBlanc wasn't even on the team after I think he got suspended for the third game of the season, and he didn't play. He was sent down to Albany after that and never came back up again. So they didn't really have anyone of that role last year. I guess they feel that was a need. I'm not necessarily convinced that both Cam Jansen and Eric Bolton will be on the team. I guess we'll see. You know, Cam Jansen has a two-way contract, and he could end up, you know, replacing LeBlanc in Albany for all I know. I think it remains to be decided. I don't know. I mean, I think they felt like they needed some toughness to compete in the Atlantic Division, where the other teams have some big guys, and I'm not necessarily convinced that part of the game. You know, if you can be a physical, tough guy and play the game, that's mm-hmm. great. But, you know, we'll have to see if Eric Bolton can do that job and still be able to play a regular role. And I don't think that you just carry guys who just fight anymore in the NHL.
I mean, yeah, Tom, I know Bolton played significant minutes, so to speak, for the fourth line in Atlanta last year with Jim Slater and Chris Thorburn, but surprising that he got a two-year deal. Were you surprised by that?
Yes.
I mean, was there any... I mean, did Lamoriello explain himself at all? Not that he ever explains himself, but at least to some extent, or somebody in the organization touched on the fact that it seemed like he was out there far past, you know, the usual time of signings, and that he could have been had fairly reasonably at a one-year contract.
Didn't get a chance to ask Lou Lamoriello about the Bolton signing, other than to ask him if he signed him. And and it came up so quickly, he was surprised that it was already known that he had signed. So didn't get a chance to ask him, you know, the reasoning behind it, why he gave him a two-year deal. That's not something he would usually discuss anyway.
Yep.
But in the signing of Cam Jansen, he said that it filled a need. So, I mean, I guess that was further, they felt they needed more of that.
Tom, this question is going to be considered sacrilegious by some Devils fans. Is this possibly Martin Brodeur's last year?
It's possibly his last year, yeah. I mean, it's not a secret that something he's been saying for a while, that he's going to play out the last year of his contract and then see how things go, which is what this is, his last year of his contract. I think he'd like to play beyond that, but he's just going to wait and see how the year goes. And one of the things he mentioned to me last year in training camp is that he doesn't know what's going to happen with the next round, of, you know, when they negotiate the CBA. And he's already been through two lengthy work stoppages and another really short one when he was just starting out. And I don't think he really wants to sit through another lengthy one. And he said if it goes on, if there happens to be a work stoppage, you know, God forbid that happens, he might retire. So those are things that you'll have to look out for as we go forward. And, you know, I guess there could be other reasons for him to retire. But I think in general, he would, if they're playing hockey next, you know, in 2012-13 at the start of the season, I think he probably would like to play. But we'll have to see how the upcoming season goes.
Final question here, Tommy. You look at the roster, and it seems like there still is kind of an Achilles heel on the back end. Why has the team, first of all, I guess, do you agree with that? And second, if so, why don't you think that the Lamoriello has addressed that need at all through free agency or through trade?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
The Achilles heel of the team still appears to be defense, and I wanted to know, first off, if you agree with that, and second of all, if that is the case, why Lamoriello has not addressed that through either free agency or through trade?
I agree that they need, as I mentioned with Larson, they need the puck-moving skill on defense. That's something that they've sorely been lacking the last 2 years, and it's tough. But through free agency, there weren't a lot of guys available, and on top of that, they don't have a lot of cap space, and they still have to re-sign Zach Parise, as we said. And so I think it's the question of trying to pull off a trade. And I know that they at least inquired about Burns from Minnesota before he was traded to San Jose, but it's going to take some work to get a deal done. So I don't know how they're going to do it either, but it's something they need to address, I agree.
Tom Giulitti of the Bergen Record, thanks very much for joining us this evening on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Take care, Tom. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Tom.
Devils are going to be an interesting team to watch. They never seem to play by the quote-unquote rules.
They're not as bad as they were at the beginning of the year. They're probably not as good as they were at the end of the year. They're somewhere in between. I still see some flaws, that being defense, specifically, as we just mentioned with Tom, puck moving. Their offense is quite good. Brodeur probably will be better than he was last season. And if that's the case, you have to, does it really boils down to, as I think, probably defense and also coaching. I mean, Jacques Lemaire is brilliant in the way he does things. It's not exciting. It's not aesthetically pleasing, but it works. And he can especially shelter poor defensemen with his system and poor defense quality, you know, like he did in Minnesota for many years. You know, now they have better defensemen in Minnesota. Minnesota, but when he was there, you know, it was the likes of Brad Bomberdier and guys like that he would be able to shelter. I am not so sure another coach, maybe Hitchcock can, but I'm not so sure many other coaches can do that. And I think that's why those two things work hand in hand to me. If you have that defense, I think your coach should be tailored to that defense. If you're going to be making a move to address it, maybe be more puck moving, maybe Ken Hitchcock is not your guy.
And back on the topic of Parise, I think there's a good chance that he goes to arbitration and gets a one-year deal and then becomes a UFA. And if that happens, then are the Devils rebuilding?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
If Brodeur retires and they don't have Parise anymore, are they rebuilding around Kovalchuk?
And
to add to that, Richie, you know this. Parise and his agent have been negotiating for a long time now. It's not like they've just been negotiating for 3 or 4 weeks. So,
but you mentioned that, and that's actually a really good point by you, because after, not next season, but the season after, the team only has 4 players under contract. That's Kovalchuk, Volchenkov, Talander, and Green, a.k.a. 3 guys they signed last summer and 1 guy they signed this summer. If they only have 4 guys, maybe they are rebuilding. But if that's the case, don't you want, you know, you'd want to take back that Kovalchuk contract.
Of
so
course.
It's very, very, very interesting to see. You're exactly right. Parise with a 1-year deal, you can you let him go to arbitration and then take a 1-year deal? Because if that's the case, his trading value is it's going to be its highest before the season starts or after the month when he proves he's healthy again. But after that, either you sign him or you got to deal him right away. Look what happened with that same Kovalchuk person.
I think if he ends up taking a 1-year deal and the Devils struggle, it's going to be an absolute free-for-all trying to get him for anything. But he's the key to their short-term success and long-term success, because if you've just got Kovalchuk, Eliash has only got probably 2 or 3 years left. You've got Zajac, but Zajac isn't as effective without a guy like Parise on his wing. So,
You know what? And as you think about Parise in that sense, there were rumors last year that they would trade for, you know, Malkin for Parise. It could be a huge blockbuster trade. Who knows if it would ever happen? But Parise to play with his buddy Crosby,
sure,
they'd be dynamic together. Malkin to give a presence in New Jersey, plus play with Kovalchuk. It kind of seemed to work in many ways. Their best bet may be to trade him early next season to a team as part that can negotiate a contract as part of a trade kind of thing, and you can get equal value back. Because if you can't do that, you're not getting equal value back. If you're going to get a package like they got for Kovalchuk in Atlanta, aside from the compensation, compensation meaning that what the Devils gave up, aside from the picks they did because they violated the rules, that wasn't that much to give up for him.
No, because Atlanta didn't have any leverage. Everyone knew that he was leaving.
Exactly. So do you want to get in that situation? A lot of questions. And Ezzie, as a follower of the Devils for many years, knows that this could go either way. And that's Lamoriello, since the cap has been instituted,
no longer a genius. He's not done a good job with that cap.
No.
People can question it for a while there.
That's being generous.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And I've been one of the harsher ones going for a number of years now. But going back for a long time now, you know, he's got the reputation of a genius. He's strictly earning that reputation based on past performance and nothing he has done recently.
And I know you want to go to break. I mean, doesn't it begin and start with, I mean, we hear it a lot and we've heard a lot over the years about David Conte. When's the last time a Devils prospect came through the system and was really effective?
Yeah, and that's why I think Adam Larson is there's so much excitement over Adam Larson,
sure,
because the Devils won the draft lottery and moved up get the 4th pick.
Sure.
And Larson, some people were talking about Larson going number 1, and they got him at 4.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Nugent Hopkins towards the end of the season and Huberto, they started to emerge and they were a little bit more appealing, but I think the Devils are going to it's tough to say how effective Larson can be. Remember Victor Hedman in his rookie year. He was pretty ineffective. But, I mean, down the road, they're going to build their defense around Larson, you know, 3 or 4 years down the road. So.
But you said it when they and we're going to break here, Drew, but what you said, when they build around Larson, that, you know, happens to be hand-in-hand with many other guys on the downside of their career. So how do those two slopes work together? One's going up, one's going down. Do they meld them together and start rebuilding on the fly? Do they strip it down? Do they go for it? Because they really have the talent, if you had a defenseman or two, to probably make a good run. We'll see.
We will see. When we come back after the commercial messages, we'll shift into all Jets mode. More on the Wheeler, more on the other 6 signings. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. That was a bit of a hectic 30 minutes to start off the program. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Did you just get out of the shower? I know it's plus 34 outside, but wow. Can we get Drew a beach towel over here?
A lot of sweat on that brow, Drew.
They're just throwing me under the bus as normal because I'm actually perfectly dry right now.
It's perfectly dry.
It's actually pretty nice in here. It's obviously climatized.
It's air-conditioned, which I can't say the same for my parents' houses. Their air conditioning broke, and I'm house-sitting for them right now. So if you don't, if you, you know, it's going to be unpleasant later on today, let me tell you. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. My name is Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can join Michael Remus at the Illegal Curve chat room. Go to www.illegalcurve.com. A great hockey conversation going on right there. Vinny C. is taking issue with our comment that the Devils have had no prospects come to fruition the last little while.
Who's he citing?
Vinny C. is citing Zajac and Parise.
Well, no, I think we're
Fane and Josefsson, Tedenby.
Well, hold on.
Come on now.
I mean, for Vinny, well, I mean, Vinny. I mean, if he doesn't listen to the show, but
well,
I mean,
he's obviously listening because he was.
Well,
able
I mean,
to
not. I mean, in the past. I mean, he'd have to know I'm a Devils fan, and I'd have to agree with Richie that we're not talking about. Parise was drafted in 03. The Devils moved up to take him, I believe, 13th overall. Went to UND. Great pick.
8 years ago.
04, Zajac was selected. Good pick. 05, Bergfors was selected. Good pick. But then well, decent pick. But we're talking more like the last, we're talking 08, 09.
Are we talking about the last four years? Where's the gap? Lockout? The gap? Is that what we're talking about since the lockout?
No.
In the salary cap era?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Okay, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Going back to 06.
Okay, fine.
They have not drafted well, and the only reason you have to know that, well, the way that's seen is the fact that their prospect system right now is pretty bare. I mean, if you were to, I mean, the Hockey News does this every year, but if you were to rank their prospects right now, they don't have very good prospects in their system. Jakob Josefsson, okay, he got some time last year. He's looking okay. But last year, Tedenby, same thing. He's got a bright future in New Jersey. But if you look at the team in Albany, there's not a lot coming through the pipe.
If you look at the guys who should have already been there, the guys who should have already made a strong impact, you're saying it's not.
Whenever there's a gap, there's a gap in production. That's all. It doesn't mean that they've never drafted well before. Of course they've drafted well. But there's a gap of productivity. You know, when you have exactly, as he mentioned, you have your Parise draft, you know, Zajac in 04, okay? 05, Bergfors hasn't turned out. 06, where's Karenti? It's been 5 years already. I mean, why hasn't he turned into what they thought he would be? And their first pick in 07, they didn't have a first-round pick. They drafted, what, Mike Hoffel?
Is he awful?
Like, you know, let's talk about 2008. I mean, nope. Tedenby, okay, I see where you're going there.
For that one. Drew, that was awful.
Cormier actually, you know, I mean, Henrik and Cormier have potential to do things, but... And then you have Josefsson.
But they've traded Cormier and Bergfors. So when you factor in the fact that those guys have not put up more than... Well, Cormier's 21 and has only played a few NHL games.
Let me ask you this, Ez. Is anybody on their roster since 2005, drafted since 2005, 6 years ago, made a significant impact? Six years?
No.
So, I mean, I don't know how you could argue that they have had success. It doesn't mean they've had terrible drafts, but they just haven't...
And Richie, the most troubling thing is that at the key positions where New Jersey was always strong,
that's right,
or still is,
specifically
goaltender and defense. Yeah. I mean, you can't tell me Matt Terramina is going to tear it up this year, unfortunately. But,
This is a Devils fan talking.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't talk. I should slow down on the energy drinks.
Yeah,
but
how many have you had?
The Devils are going to be in trouble if they don't strengthen these positions. Brodeur has got max 2 years left. And these guys like Patrick Elias cannot carry the team on their backs very much longer.
Let's talk about a team that did strengthen their positions today, and that's the Winnipeg Jets. In case you missed it, the Jets re-signed Blake Wheeler.
They did?
Yes, they did. Avoiding salary arbitration. 2 years, $2.45 million the first year, $2.65 million the second year. Average annual value of $2.55. We started off the show by having Matt Keeter, Blake Wheeler's agent, on the program. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. And of course, you can check out our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve, where Michael Remus has been tweeting out some of our favorite or some of the best quotes that came out of that interview with Matt Keeter. Richard, 2.55 AAV. So you're gonna that's your salary cap hit for the next two seasons.
Yep.
That's pretty reasonable if you ask me.
You know, I compared. I wrote an article on Blake Wheeler. It was actually posted June 27th. So that's about, three weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I compared him to five players, kind of in his range, in his salary range, production range, in their years of experience in the National Hockey League range. And those players were Patrick Berglund on St. Louis.
Yeah.
Who recently signed contracts, but let me preface that. Patrick Hornquist in Nashville. Brian Little on Winnipeg. Chris Versteeg. Now on Florida.
Yeah.
On 10
teams.
Jack Voracek now on Philadelphia. So those five players in terms of, you know, what they were bringing to the table, offensively productive. And I thought that based on those five comparables, Wheeler's numbers compared fairly favorably to all five of those guys, whether it be points or even strength production, ice time, you know, who he's playing against and all of those kind of types of issues. The average of those five players have recently signed contracts. Those five players, signed for approximately about a 2.65 cap hit per season. And that was a little bit inflated because Chris Versteeg, if you remember, the Bowman and I think Sheldon Dale,
signed for more than he should have because Chicago screwed up the qualifying offer.
They had to sign him before they lost him.
That's right.
Possibly lost him.
Yeah.
So
gladly lost him now.
So he compared a little bit pretty favorably to those guys. So I had him at, you know, I thought that his numbers would be starting at 2.75 to a high point of 3.1, which I thought it would have been pretty high, but still reasonable, 2.75 being the low point. I think to be able to, and then I mentioned later on in the article, this is kind of how he summed it up. I said the above contracts were also 2 to 3 years in duration, modeling St. Louis and the organization's extension with Patrick Berglund. I think a lot of comparables, bigger guy, not the toughest guy, but good talent. And considering the Jets' lack of familiarity with Wheeler as a player, because they don't have familiarity with him.
Not a ton.
A two-year deal seems reasonable for both parties. So 2 years seemed like it made sense, and they seem to have agreed with that. The contract, a little bit less than I thought, 2.55 as opposed to maybe 2.75 or 2.85. I think Sheveldayoff did a great job here.
Yep.
I think he gets value. I think Wheeler will probably outproduce that contract. And in this day and age, that's one of the main reasons for teams to have success, especially teams that aren't going up to the cap and need to maximize their value without spending all of their money.
You know what really impressed me about Matt Keeter, who we just had on about, 25 minutes ago?
Mm-hmm.
What impressed me about what he said is that Blake Wheeler enjoyed his time in Atlanta, but also wanted to come to Winnipeg. He's from Minnesota. And as far as him not getting, you know, maybe a little bit, you know, as much as he could have, that's probably only a negative from the agent side. But the signing is great because the way I look at this, if he outperforms his contract, he's going to want to stay. And
but
this is a guy that...
interesting, though, is if he outperforms these 2 years, he still has one more year before he's a UFA eligible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he's got 2 years here as the RFA. Then he'll still have one more year as an RFA.
Which will put him in Andrew Ladd territory this year. And the player has about as much leverage as a player can have when he's still an RFA.
Yeah.
Meaning he can take it to arbitration.
Right, which he would have to do.
And then he could be a pending UFA the year after, so you don't want to let him go.
Right, Richie. And Matt Keeter, he mentioned that he also represents Ron Hainsey, Mark Stewart, and also referenced his relationship with Sheveldayoff as far as getting the deal done quickly. So this is really impressive.
Absolutely.
This could have easily gone to arbitration and not been a very impressive turnout. So,
well, no, if it goes to arbitration, then you have to talk about each other's flaws, and nobody likes that. Are you surprised at all that they didn't just do 3 years, and so that after this contract's done, they would have gone straight into UFA territory?
You both don't know what you're getting, really.
Right.
Wheeler doesn't know what he's getting in Winnipeg. Winnipeg doesn't know what they're getting in Wheeler. 1 year is too long. You don't want to be back here again. 3 years. No, sorry, 1 year is too short.
1 year is too short.
Excuse me.
3 years is too long.
3 years, you take him into the pending UFA, but you don't know what you got, and neither side does, so they're feeling each other out. What if after a year they're not happy? Well, you only have a year left, and they still retain his rights. So for the Jets, you want to be able to retain his rights. And I think you could extend 3 years. Wheeler might not have wanted to extend 3 years. I thought 2 years fit well within what both of them probably wanted. And I think this is an interesting signing in that Wheeler's going to be your number one right winger.
Yep.
And I like Eric Fehr, and I like what he brings to the table, and I thought that acquisition was terrific.
But he's injured.
Not only that, Drew. Wheeler's a more talented player.
Okay.
And Wheeler's going to play. Wheeler finished the season last year playing on the number one line in Atlanta with Andrew Ladd and Brian Little. And they were very effective. Wheeler was their most efficient scorer when he got over there. He was terrific. And so you've signed your number one right winger, in theory, if he produces, even at the level last year, of last year's production in Atlanta, and they got him for $2.55 for the next 2 years, you're going to see some smiling faces in the Winnipeg Jets press box next year.
Kevin Cheveldayoff does not think he signed a 75-point forward. He knows exactly what Wheeler slots in next year.
And what do you think, though, Ez? What do you think he slots in as? That's a fair question.
I'd have to agree that he slots in as the top-line right winger based on his play last year, based on his health, based on his performance.
Well, based
and if
on
he,
the...
And if he goes... and if he, the thing with the Jets is right now... You know, as it stands, what's today, July 18th?
Yep.
Right now, there are really no set lines anywhere.
But are you looking at the same situation you had with Andrew Ladd, where the guy comes to the team, he gets more ice time, mm-hmm. he gets more power yes. play opportunity, gets everything else, and his numbers are going to go up correspondingly?
He was almost a point-per-game player when he came to Atlanta last year.
Yeah, 23 games, 17 points.
Let's look at his ice time, guys. I think that you look at expectations for him. He played 11.5 minutes in his first season in Boston, 12.5 minutes the season after, and about the exact same 12:48 in Boston for half of last, or a little bit more than half of last season, or half of it, whatever it was. When he went to Atlanta, ice time went up to 15:30 a game. Power play ice time went up to 2:10 from a minute in Boston. So you look at it that way. If you bump that up even a little more for a first-line player to, say, 17 and 3 minutes on the power play,
right.
or 16 and 3 minutes, something like that.
20 minutes a game.
About 20 minutes a game.
Yeah.
And he produces at the level he was producing last year, you'd expect 60 points. If you're going to get 60 points from a guy and pay him $2.55 million, that's pretty good value.
It seems what they've done that. I mean, that's what happened with Ladd, is he got the opportunity and his points went up.
He was a third liner in Boston, so yes.
Right. And Wheeler, the same thing. And it seems like that's what they're hoping with Eric Fair also.
Absolutely.
You know, give him the, you know,
value, Drew.
Of course, give him a, you know, okay, we traded for a guy who was a third liner on another team.
That's right.
We see that with additional time on the ice, he's going to be able to increase his point production mm-hmm. and everything else. So, and, you know, let's get him for relatively nothing.
Absolutely.
Pay him, you know, a reasonable, you're paying him third line minute money.
What, who? Wheeler?
Well, Fair.
Oh, Wheeler. Fair.
Fair. I mean, Wheeler's sort of between second and
yeah,
third
line. Yeah,
that's
the average contract.
Yeah, and you might be getting, you know, you're getting top six productivity out of it. Sounds like a recipe for a successful salary cap management.
And that's you know, credit goes to Dudley for getting Ladd, and credit goes to Dudley for also acquiring Wheeler, and credit goes to Zinger and Cheveldayoff for acquiring Fair.
But I think also credit though for signing Wheeler to a contract.
Oh.
That is not you're slotting him into your top line, but you're not paying him
that's right.
top and, line dollar.
And Matt Keeter, I've seen him speak before at a conference.
Matt Keeter, Blake Wheeler's agent.
He was on the show earlier today, very right. articulate. But what I liked about Matt Keeter when I saw him speak, is spoke for about an hour, not pretentious. You know, there was no pretense with a guy like this, as you'll see with a guy like Don Meehan, who, you know, there are many questions about the way he does things. That they can go unspoken or not, I'll speak about them. And a guy like Matt Keeter is a straight shooter, does his own thing. He is...
Well, he said the negotiation was an easier one because him and Chevy worked together before.
He needs to take his player's best interest in mind, Drew, and negotiate as much as he can, but he also takes instructions from the player, which some guys sometimes do as well as others.
Wheeler, some agents don't do as well as others.
Wheeler liked the fit, clearly. He liked playing number one minutes. He, as indicated by Keeter's comments, was open and willing and happy to play in Winnipeg, by the way, about... You know, an 8-hour, 7-hour drive from his home in Minneapolis, from his, you know, was his hometown in Minneapolis. There was many factors that worked for him and many factors that brought a deal together. And we asked him about if arbitration was a, you know, the threat of arbitration would push
him
off. Push the players, push Wheeler, excuse me, and Cheveldayoff, both of them, to come to an agreement. And while he, you know, he said, good question. And then he said, probably not. The truth is this. I mean, he's not going to tell us if it is or it isn't, because it's a leverage and a negotiating tactic. And it's fair. The players have very little leverage, but arbitration is one aspect of leverage that they do have. Having said that, Blake Wheeler went through it last year, and no matter what anybody says about arbitration, and the players probably do better than the owners do.
It's a negative. It leaves a negative feeling.
When you sit there for an hour or 2 hours or these day-long arbitration sessions, and you hear how bad you are, so to speak, don't think. Nobody wants to hear negative things about themselves, but people can stomach them pieces at a time. Nobody can sit there for 8 hours or 4 hours and hear how bad they are or what their weaknesses are. It hurts your psyche. It hurts your confidence, and that's why both parties don't want to go to that. And I bet you Wheeler, after last season, didn't want to experience the same thing.
Let's go to break. When we come back, more about the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. About 7 minutes or so before 7 o'clock. Yes, Richard?
Drew, can we allow Ezzy to share one of his great pickup lines that he just...
It is a fabulous pickup line. Ezzy, by all means, please share with the public.
Well, first of all, Drew, I love your white stripes shirt.
Definitely not wearing a white stripes shirt.
That was the white stripes, I assume, right?
No, so we were at a patio on Cordon, and I met someone that I didn't really know very well in real life, so I went up to her and I said, I follow you on Twitter, can I follow you in real life? and then she got up, left,
and called the authorities.
Called the police.
Yeah. 780-1290. If you want in on the Blake Wheeler signing, 780-1290, of course. If you're also the authorities looking to arrest Ezzy, he will be available outside the studio in about an hour and 5 minutes' time. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, remember to check out www.illegalcurve.com for all your latest news and notes. You can also send us an email if you are a little bit shy and you don't like hearing your voice. Drew@illegalcurve.com.
Drew, can you email us?
I already emailed you guys. I emailed you guys earlier today.
I know this is a little bit off topic, Drew, but at work today, we didn't have internet for 5 hours. I was telling you guys about this earlier. Yeah. You actually can't function without the internet at work. Like, what do you do?
It's true.
Do you fold paper? Like, I mean, there's not a lot you can do
about
without
doing
the internet.
Work?
They used to do work before computers.
Well, you got nothing. There's no Google. There's no Twitter. There's no anything.
None of those sound the least bit work-related.
That's true.
Anyway, 780-1290 if you want to talk about Blake Wheeler's contract signing. The Jets also signed a number of other players
today.
They signed
like 7 guys today.
Yeah, those are all guys who, like as Richie said earlier off the air, he said they're just guys who took their qualifying offers.
Yeah. Very important players for the future, by the way.
Yeah, no big surprise here. The guys they also signed, Brett Festerling, they signed, as we had reported earlier. Most of these guys had actually already been reported, just not officially.
Yeah, and we don't know all of the terms. We know some of the terms.
We don't know any of the terms.
It just happened.
Maxwell
was 715 because it was 10% higher than his... the qualifying offer these guys all accepted was 10% higher than
Not all. Some under a million, Drew, are 5%.
Sorry, pardon me. Between 5 or 10%. Higher than last year.
I can pull up the Maxwell because I wrote about it in the June 1st, way back when, and the Maxwell qualifying offer, they qualified him in late June, and he carried an $850 cap hit last season on the final year of his entry-level contract. The cap hit consisted of a base salary of $650,000, which means he requires a 10% increase, which you mentioned, on any qualifying offer he receives.
Which is $715,000.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly. So that's, I mean, these
are... a two-way deal, by the way.
Yeah, all of these are going to be under $1 million, so there's no real big worry about that in terms of financial implications. But here are the guys they signed. Brett Festerling, Riley... Oh, boy, I'm going to screw this one up. Holzapfel. Anybody? Is that okay?
I've heard it. I've heard it pronounced, but I can't pronounce it.
Okay, Riley Holzapfel. Arturs Kolda. Spencer.
Who we've written about at length on illegalcurve.com, Kyle has.
I'm sorry, Remus?
Oh, Remus, come on.
It's Riley Holzapfel.
Holzapfel?
Oh.
I'm pretty sure. I have him in NHL 11.
Ooh, Holzapfel.
And yet another instance of video games coming through in the clutch. Riley Holzapfel. Arturs Kolda.
Arturs Kolda is a stay-at-home Latvian defenseman. Kyle Kozier, our prospect reporter, has written about him at length on the website if you want to check it out.
Spencer Matchacek.
He's a kind of an up-and-down winger that people have some expectations for, but a guy who's going to develop in the AHL, so don't worry about seeing him right away.
Yeah. Ben Maxwell, who we just spoke about.
Maxwell is an interesting guy in that he can maybe play center, generally center, maybe play the wing, has some offensive capability. You probably expect to see him at the A this year, but you never know. That guy is a guy who could crack the bottom six, absolutely.
And the last one, Kendall McCardle, who we acquired in exchange for Angelo Esposito.
One other guy, Jason Jaffrey.
Oh, Jason Jaffrey was not... Yeah, he was also signed to a two-way contract. Jason Jaffrey sort of interests me. If he can get his health back, he could do something.
Where, though?
Remember 3 years ago, guys? He had some injuries, but remember 3 years ago with the Moose, who are now going to become the St. John's... Are they really going to be called the Ice Caps, by the way?
I don't know.
That's the rumor, but who knows?
Okay. Well, a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, when the Moose had that good year, Jason Jaffrey, Jason Krogh, those were our best players, but a lot of these guys are going to end up playing in the AHL. Ben Maxwell's probably the guy that will play the most in the NHL. But a lot of these guys are younger. Artur's cooled down. There's a good chance that he's going to factor into the future. Of the Jets' D plans. So it's nice to see all these RFAs signed, Drew. If you ask any successful general manager that knows what they're doing these days, you build your team through the draft, and you build your team through a good AHL system. Yep. What team just went to the Stanley Cup Finals that had a great AHL feeder system? The Vancouver Canucks were being fed Ryan Kessler, Alex Burrows, Kevin Bieksa. The list goes on and on and on and on. Alex Edler, Corey Schneider. A lot of these guys are going to end up in the NHL very soon, Drew. It's not going to be 5 years from now that you see these guys in the NHL. It's going to be a year to 2-3 years that you see these guys in the NHL.
I can confirm it's Holzapfel. Remus was smart enough to pull out Riley Holzapfel. He was smart enough to pull up the NHL pronunciation guide, which I guess I should have on hand a little bit more often.
Should be in your back pocket, Drew. But on the point of those qualifying offers, I mean, Jason Jaffrey, I mean, where do you play him if he's going to be an effective player? He's probably your fourth line left winger. I don't know if he plays left or right. Fourth line winger.
Right winger.
Yeah, might want to match him up against the other team's fourth line kind of thing, but he's not a top six guy. And that really also depends on how Claude Noel wants to play his third and fourth lines. Will there be a checking line? Will there be three scoring lines? Will the fourth line be an energy line or more of an offensive line against other teams' fighters? There's many ways to go, and so he could factor into it, and it'd be nice to see. But I don't foresee him being anything other than a bottom.
It just goes to what we were talking about before, though. Options. They're just developing competition for those bottom lines. So those guys are going to have to prove themselves and work hard day in, day out. That's all they're doing. These are no risk, really, signings guys who are going to battle, neck and neck, night in, night out, for a chance to crack the roster.
You know, I'll let Richie get in here really quickly, but, I mean, obviously we're getting really excited for the regular season, right? Everyone's looking at October 9th, Richie, against the Montreal Canadiens. But I'll tell you something, training camp is going to be exciting because you're going to see a Jason Gregoire, or you're going to see a Rick Rippon. You're going to see maybe Derek Meach have a very good training camp. And you're going to see one of those guys snag one of the opening spots. I mean, there's going to be a lot of competition here. This is going to be a hard-working team, so it's going to be exciting
you're right. To
see these guys in training camp because there's a lot of jobs. I'll stress that again. There's a lot of jobs that are open. There's a lot of guys that are on the bubble.
Competition is important, especially for young players. One thing that successful organizations generally don't allow their young players, just give them a spot. For example, like the Islanders giving Josh Bailey a spot on their roster. Look what happened. He lost confidence. When you have veterans, you know who does this really well? The Detroit Red Wings. Never give a youngster a spot on the roster before earning his stripes, unless he's some kind of superhuman player. Otherwise, he goes to the AHL and develops, or in Europe. And I think that's a nice, a nice model to follow.
And look how, that's helped Darren Helm. He's got a Stanley Cup.
Exactly.
And he's how old is he now? 22, 23 years old. He's going to be a very good player this year. Now he's earned the third line role.
Cronwall there took...
They're growing into their responsibility.
Cronwall took forever to get through the system. Jonathan Erickson, a guy who didn't have a great year last year, but he was a forward. They converted to defense. He played a lot of time in the AHL. I saw him a few years ago before he came up, and I thought, well, this guy's pretty good already. A guy like Kyle Quincy, too, in Detroit. A lot of the guys could have played in their NHL teams, and they were molding them in the minors. And I think that this organization, being the Jets, feel the exact same way about developing talent at a slow rate and a professional level.
Let's go to break. When we come back on the other side, Shelley Anderson of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette is going to join us to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.